Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to leaders that are really shifting the paradigm, and we get their insights and their strategies and their tactics on how to scale their companies up, but also, importantly, how to scale themselves up as they go through a journey of ups and downs, let's be honest, right? And today, super excited to finally have on the show both Jimmy and Tomas. They both work at CEO, and Tomas is the CEO and Jimmy is the CCO, and both have stellar backgrounds and stellar careers inside the tech space and the tech industry. So guys, welcome and super excited to have you on the show.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, brilliant to be on, Richard. I'm happy that we got this scheduled in eventually. Super cool.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, before we kick off, for those of you out there and listening, today's an important discussion, right? And one that sometimes sort of gets left to the back end of things when you're scaling up and thinking about sales. And it's about organization and making certain as you build and scale your company, so too you build and scale and structure your organization so that you understand and can see whether you are expanding or on the counter, you're contracting and you can actually start doing things about this, right? So guys, super important topic today. And I think the best place to start is the common denominator in business, and that's people, right? And what I'd like to hear from both of you, maybe Tomas can go first, is what is your philosophy on dealing with people?
Yeah, that's actually something, you know, we always try to X-ray and improve based on the feedback, how we approach situations and how we solve problems. So I would say, you know, people, as you have just said, people are the number one asset to any company because they can make it better or worse as the outcome. So definitely, I think it's the most important investment area. You never should be, let's say, save costs or money on people. So I think, you know, as a startup started out from this region in Eastern Europe, we had a great, still have a great engineering base, but every startup founder should be conscious about, based on the product, what they are building, how is the best way to market it, you know, and this is the challenge for many startups, not just from our region, but, you know, from those places where there is a, you can build a strong engineering base, but actually to market and you know, create an efficient business is more challenging. So I think what we got right, and I hope other startups can do something similar, is to actually invest the time and resources to find the best leader in the commercial, such as the sales and marketing end. And then based on the experience and the know-how which they could bring into a company, you can build a great model on that. So I would say, you know, always look at from the perspective if someone is you know, expensive. Many startups like try to be more risk averse and not take risk on people because they are like, hey, it's, you know, it's too, we would reduce the runway by a big percentage and you know, we wouldn't be able to afford this person. But actually, I think, and that's the truth, is like without risks, there is no success. So I think everyone should be conscious about, you know, what's the risk appetite and then invest in people, and you're investing in people who are the best for the company, because they can really like be a game changer and they can take the company to the next level. So I've heard things like, you know, from other startups that, you know, I speak with other founders and they are telling me like, oh, you know, why would you be work with this headhunter? They are too expensive. We can find another headhunter for, you know, half of the cost. Or why would we hire such an expensive expert in the organization? We can find someone much cheaper. But what I'm saying is like always, you know, like look at the potential results. Like if you bring in someone that might be not such an expert like someone else, then it's going to have a decreased result of the actual outcome. So I think in terms of people, you really have to be take care, and you have to invest, and you have to create a leadership team that are consisting mainly or preferably only A players.
It's not. I think you touched on an important point there. It's not about cost. it can't be about cost when you're scaling, especially a vision business or any business. It has to be about value. What value those people or resources bring into your business that allow you to get from where you are now incrementally towards where you want to go, right? Jimmy, sorry to interrupt. What were you going to say, mate?
No, I was going to add on to this. There's a really famous engineering experiment that's often cited.
Yeah.
And it's looking at engineers, and these are all A-grade engineers. But the difference between the top one and the middling, the median, is not a 10x return on that. It's more like a 50 to 100x. Mm. And that's the multiple that's quite different with, when we look at people there. We also talk about like talent density a lot, within Sayon. Relatively young, so just come up for 4 years old, Series A back in March, so relatively young organization. But like Richard, as you know, in our pre-chat, kind of pre-Series A, so before pandemic in March last year, a year and a half ago, it was 18 people at Sayon, right? 1-8. We're now over 150 people, and we'll finish the year up at 200. So this has been like, a massive, like if we aren't getting to grips with what will kind of attract and retain and build the best kind of people as part of this team, then it's mission critical to us as well.
I think up to 50 people, the founders, the co-founders should be personally invested in terms of time and resources into recruitment. So I think that it's very important to build the basis of the organization on people who you want to work with and can represent the core values of the organization. And of course, over 50 people still for head or VP or of course, C-suite based roles, the founders should be still involved in the recruitment process. But I think up to 50, like that's the threshold where, it's just getting too big and already like there should be like a recruitment department or sourcer department who can take care of finding the best talent. And unfortunately, it's also quite, headhunters are actually one of the quickest way to find the best talent, but they're also very expensive. So for an early stage startup, I would suggest to be as a headhunter and a founder too. So you should definitely like reach out to potential candidates on LinkedIn, via email and go to events where you go with the mindset that, that you will also try to find people and even long-term. So like, even if you make just connections, they might be not interested at the moment when you meet them, but as a long-term investment, building up a strong network is one of the greatest assets, as what an entrepreneur can have.
And that still takes up a decent part of your day, right? Like 20, 30% of your time is like trying to find the next amazing, like 100x, kind of people into the team as well.
Yeah. Maybe always, I guess.
Yeah.
And so you're going out, you're searching for, let's say, talent, but how do we deal with that? We have these people that, fine, we attract them. We get good folk coming in. They're doing what we want to do, what we would like them to do, right? They're moving us towards our mission. But once they're in, once we have this team, we've gone from, 18 to 150, how do you engage? How do you make certain that day in, day out, the folk that are involved in your mission and your purpose are actually taking away what they want to take away from the project, and to such an extent that obviously you retain that talent and there's a sort of a vicious cycle of evolution.
I can chip in here. So I think this all starts even on that first engagement with whoever that is. It's expectation setting. And I think for us, we're trying to marry up people that want to build, because we're just earlier stage, right? It's not so much about mega process and certainly not policy. It's people that know they want to get their hands dirty and they can still make change at this stage. And it's going to be for quite a while with us. Yeah. So that's what we're identifying in. And in my head, I'm hoping their eyes light up at the prospect of being able to make impact and build. Mm. So it starts from, I think, early engagement. And to me, that the get to know you process in the interview is really an extension of that. And then as they interact with our team through that, that's really what we're looking for, is someone that can already kind of chip in and start to go, all right, well, that's what I want. So when they're starting on day one, we've got lots of cases, we'll name them by name, but like where, yeah, we move quite quickly as a startup. So we move quickly in terms of if it feels like the right feel, we probably still use a lot of like, there's a feel element, which is, you know, we're trying to move more data, of course.
Yeah.
But because we move so quickly, there's oftentimes we can get in a position where we can get someone started. And that whole time, of course, is much more effective if they're already aligned with us, that this is what they want. And it's just an ongoing kind of discussion for that point.
Yeah. I would add here that, you know, people need to be feel valued. So even, you know, if they're in the first couple of days, I think it's very important to collect continuously feedback about even the onboarding process, you know, what we could improve. That's what we do, not just check in with them on the first 30 or 60 or 90 days, but also like after the first week, after the second week, to see like, you know, how they felt. Is there anything we can help? Is there any blocker or you know, if they have any tool or access that's like missing? So, and, you know, we also really try to cultivate a culture where innovation will be encouraged and people can, you know, chip in with any ideas during a meeting, even new people. So we don't want to discourage people from throwing out ideas, because they would be scared that, you know, if the idea is not good, then we would not listen to them or we would not implement them. And even that's the main thing. Like, you know, if people are feeling free and confident enough to share openly ideas and you know, and even if they have any concern or they feel like there's a bottleneck in their daily job, then to speak about that is very important. And you know, like have a session where we can find a solution to all of this.
Yeah. And you mentioned something there earlier on, Jimmy, as you onboard the folk into the business, they're actually able to, well, both of you actually mentioned, they're actually able to start straight away, right? And they feel already part of the team, they start producing. But what are some of the tactics that you put in place, other than the couple of points that we just mentioned, that make certain that once someone comes in, they are productive from day one?
Yeah, I can say like a few things there. One, on a tactical level, from moment one, like I said, in pre them joining, understand implicitly they're being brought on because of whatever background or expertise they already have. And that's an additive to our team. So we value that, and we want to encourage, empower, and absolutely support them on day one. They could already chip in on whether it's SEO, whether it's on demand gen, you know, as some examples. We want them to chip in. They are the new experts, and everyone's got open ears wanting to learn, you know, from that. So that's a day one additive thing. That's the first thing. Tommy kind of mentioned it there. In our onboarding session, Tamash, Benz, and myself, we still make sure we welcome each cohort coming into the business so that they hear the founding story, the why behind we as a startup exist. And even from that first interaction, there's a mini AMA where they get a chance to, hey Tamash, why did you do it like this? Or, you know, what was it like to win the first customer? You know, those kind of whatever questions.
Finishing session, we are trying to, you know, create a very flat hierarchy when anyone from the associate levels can even come to us, founders or Jimmy even, to ask questions and, you know, hear directly from the source or you know, also to suggest things. And, you know, I think that's what keeps people also motivated. So we definitely, like, you can read, you know, a lot of, let's say, like, unoptimal things from even startups, you know, from the employees, when it's very like a command and control type of leadership in place. And you know, this actually doesn't cultivate so much innovation, but it's to get things the fastest way done might be, you know, a good approach. But long term, I think culture such as, you know, Netflix has, can be the most innovative for being able to let people just, you know, come out with ideas and be the most. It's not about efficiency, it's about innovation in the end.
Yeah. And on to that point, like, so we use Slack in a very intentional way. We wait towards, meaning 70% of our channels in there are public and open by design. So the point is folk can dip into cross-functional areas if they want. and they hear that chatter. That's kind of by design, 70%, I would say. And we're telling people this on the onboarding. We're all Slack first in terms of comms, so everything's kind of relatively instantaneous. And the idea is discouraging DMs in there, because the design thesis is that other people, if you're asking that question, then there's a good chance that four or five others who have not, maybe not piped up on it, can learn from that thread as well. Mm. So tactically, in terms of like trying to continue that learning atmosphere, that's what we want, is use the Slack there. And of course, use like stuff like an internal wiki, which starts to introduce a documentation first culture into what we're doing. And we're always thinking like, how can we, if we have to repeat it more than twice, we kind of need people. And the key is not Tamash to document or me to document. Yeah. The actual key is that day one person who brings that expertise to feel empowered to document. That's actually what our objective is there.
Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of things. You mentioned communication, you mentioned flat hierarchy, and you also mentioned sort of cross-functional collaboration. Okay, so we're going into sort of the guts of your business here. But for those listening, can you describe the benefit of a flat hierarchy? What does it give you as leaders in a scaling business?
Yeah, I would say, you know, like as an organization is growing, like you always make changes, you know, you add layers, below, above people. And sometimes some managers can become that just middlemen in processes, right? Like maybe someone is just, you know, retrieving information from one point to another and retrieving back information, like transmitting thoughts, feedback. Maybe it might be like a filter, you know, in the process, because then they might capture things from a different perspective that might be altered and, you know, provided as an as different output. So I would really think that, you know, having a flat structure when actually associates can, you know, come to me and ask or propose things or even to other levels is very useful in the sense of, you know, even these people will feel empowered and feel that they can make a change and you know, they have actually influence on decision-making process, which is very true. I think that as a leader, every time you should capture all the remarks, feedback, and thoughts as you are creating or setting up a decision, you have to take into consideration all the point of views. And in the end, when you have done that, in that case, you should come to a conclusion. But when, you know, it's about very rigid bureaucratic hierarchy in place, then it can mean that, you know, people are not willing to speak up and not willing to share new ideas because they would feel that, you know, their direct managers might not like the idea and they are just, you know, isolated and working in a silo. And that's not what we want to achieve at any point.
Yeah, I'll go back into a tactic, actually, just made me think. So every month we have, and we've had this ever since we were actually kind of 18 people, the Ask Me Anything concept. So other people call it like a town hall, stand up. And actually one thing we found is, and I wasn't sure if it was also cultural as well. So most of our team is out in Budapest as well. And we have London, we have Austin, and we have Jakarta. But I wasn't sure if it was cultural, but almost like a reticence to take full advantage of that AMA, partly because there's like a lot of people in it now, right? They're joining through Zoom, some are in person, and it's just to ask those questions related to work, though, I'd have to say. So not a completely irrelevant AMA, but like, you know, I had a chance to ask kind of, you know, hey, what's up with this? And one thing we found made a big difference was introducing stuff like Slido and going to, ideally, we wanted someone like, please, Richard, please put your name up and own it. Notice we've got a transparent culture. But then we found that the response rate shot up like crazy when we said, you know what, if you want, do it anonymously, because then you're not putting a big spotlight on you. And there's not been any, like, I would say super dicey questions or spicy questions, you know. It's been, but that's helped the kind of candidness, if you like, from, and the questions have all been decent. They've not been like silly questions from that side. Yeah.
And we're talking, I mean, ultimately it's structure, communication. We talk about how you as a team are consistently looking at different ways to communicate and you pivoting or changing the tactic depending on the result. In this case, obviously you tweaked it from Richard, his shout out to Richard, don't worry about shouting out, be anonymous. And again, it's communication, making certain everyone is part of the team, everyone is part of the process, extracting yourself away from the internal world. How do you communicate externally such that your audience also understands where you are in your journey. And if they want to lean in and get some help for whatever reason, they can.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, if you think about like customers to us, like we have built up a very strong customer success team that are, you know, helping our clients very proactively with onboarding and you know, getting help with any parts of the product and checking in regularly. So when we look at, you know, like how Sion is represented, it's very important to you think about like as a very customer facing organization. And, you know, the way how we face customers are not just the salespeople, there are also the customer success people. And, you know, everyone should have, they should all represent the same values of Sion, you know, approach, question and challenges from the same, you know, perspective. And also if like, if someone is trying to challenge us or like someone's trying to be like not the most friendly, then, you know, we should all appreciate that still and just provide the same type of help, you know, and the same type of assistance to any stakeholder in a process. And let me talk about external parties when, you know, like, let's say like, you know, external agencies who we work with for marketing or even like it could be PR or even like say infrastructure management, then we all have the mindset that we think about them as they will be like internal teammates. So we also, you know, share the same vision with them, we explain the same stories, try to involve them as they would sit next to us, because the way how they will be the highest performers, they should be like always included. And inclusion is very important, but not, I don't want to like use it as a weasley word, but let's say like inclusion mainly means for us in terms of like, you know, communication, that we try to include as many people to a meeting as possible. And even, you know, if they are not 100% relevant or if they are another department, you still invite them to a meeting and they might just, you know, reject. You can invite as optional participants and then they might just say like, hey, it's not relevant to me. But the main idea is to always be inclusive to every potential relevant teammate. And that's very important. And then, you know, when you have a feedback session, they might, you know, add additional value just by listening to a call and having like a better understanding of, you know, what's going on different and departments that, you know, in a remote world, that's super important. You know, you can join any meeting through Zoom. So we also invested quite heavily into these specific, you know, like meeting room setups. We have like a specific bar that we put on TVs, and in every office we have multiple rooms. We have these, you know, big TVs with a camera on it, and you know, it really feels like if they would be like physically there, and you know, it also helps us to enable like a more embedded type of communication, and you know, these meetings are more efficient like this.
Jimmy, would you want to add anything?
Yeah, from a go-to-market motion, we were Zoom first even pre-COVID, and our base is international by default of who uses our tech. And because of that, we've layered on a couple of stacks which accelerate that consistency around our whole startup and then external partners as well. So we use conversational tools, which literally are our note takers. So then after a meeting, and this could be new prospect, it could be customer success, educating them on how to get more use out of our tech. And all of that shared in Slack. It's, I would say the word to describe us is probably overshare on information.
Which is one thing.
Like it's all out there. We're not like, that's why we don't want stuff in private groups. We want it in open. Someone in product can check it out. Our chief architect can go hear the problem. We tag, you know, all relevant members. Marketing can see, this was the pain point. This was a use case.
It's a very, very useful tool, and there are multiple options out there that basically transcribe a meeting and create like a view when you can see like when at some point, you know, who spoke and what was the questions. You can tag a specific time point. You can share as a link. So if, you know, you had an interesting conversation with a client and you mentioned something, you can just share the link. Hey, please listen to this. Here's the link, and they click on it. And then from that very specific second, you can hear what the clients have said. And you know, I think the world is moving this way, and I think that's what, you know, we are accelerating businesses as well. And you know, I think there's still always new ideas that can be you know, used, but I think businesses should adopt, even if they are like, you know, like old school type of companies, they should still adapt to the new world and use tools like that.
Even from day one, right? Like what you, Benzo, did was like really listen to like our product development is completely driven by customer, of course, as any early stage tech company is. So despite us having really fortunate, healthy growth and the team growing at that level, the point of these is it still allows almost like founding team to listen in, right, to direct prospect pain. And then it literally, like, it changes our conversations for, hey, what's our next 6 months going to look like in terms of where we build as well? So that's the advantage of having that overshare, I think.
But here's the thing, right? So at the top of the show, we said we started off with what's your philosophy on dealing with people? And I think you guys have just summed it up. It's an inclusive, it sounds like you have an inclusive philosophy, and it extends beyond, you know, the four walls of your building, and it goes out to your ecosystem, your partners, the agents you work with, and obviously also your customers. And for anyone listening right now, this is the bedrock of dealing with people. Include them in your journey. Your journey could be whatever your journey is. Get everyone, all stakeholders included in that, and share. And once you share, you can all sort of move up that ladder incrementally together, right? So some awesome insights there. And as you go and you look at the structures you've put in, you've got the communications and, you know, all these Slack channels, et cetera, set up. You know, there's also the nitty-gritty of making certain that each department does produce what I like to call a product, but does produce stuff at the end of the day. Sales is producing new customers, new opportunities. Marketing is producing that want, that reach. Your product obviously is producing that awesome product that the customers so dearly want. And in that respect, how have you structured your business so that you can understand whether a part of it is maybe expanding and doing well, or another part of it at the same time is maybe not doing so well and needs a bit of attention?
Yeah, I can lead with this, Sam. So it's important to mention for us, Richard, we operate, our go-to-market motions are product-led growth, meaning essentially we're letting it do a lot of the talking for us and messaging. So for our market particularly, it's around trying to get a prospect with a pain to an aha light bulb moment of, holy moly, this could really affect and improve my workflow. That's kind of the key. So I would say everything else kind of flows into that. So product is first, followed by marketing to loudspeaker that out and create hopefully useful content that gets people to discover our website and hit our get demo CTA or try for free CTA. And then at the very back end of that is, I would say, sales and then CS to kind of help someone get to aha there.
We tend to call even like salespeople instead like product evangelists, because they are not focused on like just signing the contract. They're focused on educating the clients about the tool.
Exactly.
And the product, and you know, help them to solve the problem, not to make a deal, but help them to solve the problem, which is the ultimate goal of the partnership. So,
and a good point to mention here is because of the way we work commercially is it's usage-based pricing.
Yeah.
So our whole people org is set up towards that philosophy of how can I help Richard and his team literally solve more problems. And then the kind of back end of that is they use more APIs, they get more value from it, and that's how we grow alongside our customers. So if you look at our customers, they tend to be within the kind of fintechy startup space. So the more dev and kind of techy they are, it's a really great fit for us. That's why we're twinned out of both London and Budapest from that side.
But if you take, and I love the philosophy, I think product-led growth, understanding the pain points and really ultimately adding value to your blogs, their life is the way to go. But how do you then measure that sort of expansion and or contraction? Is it sort of the number of people actually clicking on that CTA button at the back end of a marketing campaign? Or is it the new product that's just about to get launched and maybe that new product isn't going to get launched because, I don't know, something's going on in the team? So what parts do you look at that gives you the insights to really control where you're going?
I would say that, you know, in one hand, we try to use OKRs and within specific KPIs for metrics. And almost it's doable for all departments and teams. So
exactly. We
can do it for, you know, the recruitment team. That means that even we can do for the people team. When we measure ENPS, for example, measure in the customer success team, Norma, NPS as well. And you don't want to go through all the departments and there, you know, but you know, it's very important to have like an OKR for each of these departments so they align, you know, what the team is working towards. It's not, you know, like something that, you know, multiple pages long. It's just like two sentences or three sentences. Yeah, yeah. But then you back up, you know, what the goal towards you're working on with KPIs. And then these KPIs should be always numerical and you could measure them. That's very important.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they could... well, their main aim is to work towards to reach those KPIs, you know, and still understand what are the bigger vision. And of course, it can happen that, you know, they might not hit something or not completely fully hit something. But then, you know, this is very important. So we analyze, you know, what went wrong, what we could do together as a joint effort to make it right and how to, you know, structure a more achievable format for the team. And you know, if the team needs some more resources, more help, then also it's a good way to understand whether time has come to expand the team, maybe add a layer above, or, you know, change the structure and help them to do a more fruitful work. But of course, this is in a hyper growth environment. It's happening so quickly that some employees might, you know, feel stressed because of all these increasing number of projects and responsibilities and you know, ever-changing job description for some roles and you know, it's not for everyone, but if you enjoy it, then it can be, and you strive, you know, in your position, then it can be very appreciated as well.
So I get it, and I see the different parts, and I fully get that, so the NPS scores or the marketing scores, etc. But both of you, as leaders, what do you take away the crap, take away the shit and the mirage of analytics and OKRs and all the stuff that are thrown at us? But what do you look at and go, okay, actually this week, the marketing team needs a bit of help. I need to jump in. I need to help out. Or this week, the dev team is doing pretty well. Let's actually take them out for a beer. What are the key, maybe the three key things from both of you that you look for that as a leader can help you help others in your team?
Yeah, I can maybe chip in first. I think no surprise for a Series A startup, we are ultimately still looking at ARR monthly.
There we go. 100%.
And then everything flows into that, right?
Yeah.
Despite it being the flip way around, it's the lagging indicator, but that's the thing that tells us roughly, are we making a difference to our customers? Are they getting value? And thus, does it reflect in our MRR, in our ARR there? So I would say that's definitely part of it. If I was to drill down a bit lower, I would say leading indicators, you know, I look after commercial, so I'm looking at everything from new deals created a week, because that's a proxy for, are we converting well? Are we having rich conversations? Are we having enough volume of conversations?
Yeah.
To marketing, how many good demos are they creating? So all that awesome, like dummies guide to fraud fighting, we have like these kind of quirky live webinars, debates, does it generate enough good demos?
Nice.
That's what I said.
Yeah, you know, and you know, if you ever look top funnel on the marketing end, like, you know, website visitors, the channel, like from how much we invested in those channels, from paid media to organic SEO, you know, how much those department cost, and you know, where, of course, when it goes to like demos and then, you know, the extension of existing clients, so numbers like CAC, CLV, very important. And that's what investors look at as well. Eventually, like what investors ask or usually ask is like, what's your ARR, you know, where you were, like beginning of the year, where you want to be end of next year, so that, you know, set up some graphs in their head that can help them to evaluate whether your business is worth to invest in or not.
Yeah.
And in terms of product, you know, it's a very, very complex topic because there are so many, you know, moving parts that, you know, it's very hard to like execute on deadlines. So I would say that, you know, since we're building on a core product and we are the inventors of our own product. So of course the clients provide feedback and you know, we also build features on that, but eventually we build the same core product. So it's just something, you know, we have to be conscious about that. Hey, you know, the deadlines are usually not something that, you know, set in stone because there can be like blockers. People can be, you know, sick. People can have a blocker in the process that needs another supplier to be involved, and then it takes time. Or like it's possible that one of your suppliers just, you know, like one day to another, they just stop providing the service, and then you have to like, you know, like also involve all the different departments and then, you know, find a new one and then still like manage client expectations. So super stressful if that happens, but, you know, you always have to think about the way when everyone will feel happy, and then it will be a win-win-win-win-win situation for all the relevant parties.
We were joking at dinner last night about, how can we get Jira task completion? Like, just measured perfectly. Yeah. That's the dream of every tech company.
Yeah, yeah, Jira. Yeah.
Any engineering front. How can we actually quantify and hold accountable like this? So it's an ongoing thing. Like,
yeah.
As well.
And I would say that if, like, when you talk about Jira task or any other task, you know, all of them has different time needed to execute on. So you can't say like, oh, you know, like this developer has finished like 7 Jira tasks and this one only finished 4. Maybe, you know, the 4 was like 10 times bigger than the 7 together. So it's more about like, hey, do line managers feel that everyone is doing their best? Do they give 100% or do they not? That's the question, in my opinion. Not the question is like, how do we always measure the best way, but do you see people like doing their best and bring innovation to the table? If that's not the case, you might have not hired the best people, but that should be the case. And then like that helps, you know, a company to even be more successful. And in the end, it results, you know, on the ARR or all the different metrics that investors look at, for example.
100% back to the people. And totally agree with you there. Totally agree. And as you look outwards and you look, you know, by the way, it is nearly the end of the year. So we look to sort of 2022 and beyond. What are the questions that you guys are asking yourselves over the dinner table? And what are the factors that you are considering as you sort of head into the final quarter and obviously into 2022?
Yeah.
Jimmy, why don't you go first?
Yeah. We made... So our whole thesis as a startup is that we wanted to bring cutting edge tools to the whole of market, because the way we looked at it was there was brilliant risk tech out there. And that's my background as well, is in that kind of space. But everyone's aimed at that kind of tier one kind of market. That's the tap for them. And, you know, it's literally Tommy and Benz's like origin story that they needed something to not kick in weeks, but to kick in minutes. Otherwise, they were dead as a business, as an online business. So with that in mind, it was our thesis is that mid and long tail is like they're hungry and underserved for this. So our thesis was into this. And I would say next year, I think, is where we realize some of the bets we've made in 21 in terms of more retail platforms that will be serving with like a one-click integration, to some really cool announcements I will make in this quarter into that kind of space. But yeah, we're doubling down on being true to that mission and democratizing fraud fighting with even more help to those SMBs and kind of mid organizations. So that's for me a big focus, at least commercially on marketing and kind of sales end.
Yeah, you know, in the end, since we are a product-led organization, or we try to be one, I think the decisions we make now, even on the product roadmap, will have an impact on our revenue and on our every metric we have. So we try to spend a lot of time with our customers too, to understand like what they would like to have, what they would need, and then, you know, implement those in our pipeline. And otherwise, you know, if we wouldn't do that, we would not create something that can be used or you know, are appreciated or implemented by the customers at some point, because it's just not what they wanted to do. Yeah, it's something that, you know, as Jimmy said, is a bet almost all the cases, but you can make an educated bet if you spend enough time to understand like what the customer wants and how they want it. And that's why, you know, even cross-functional team and moving into the cross-functional team setup in the product org made a huge difference in terms of execution and involvement. And, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, especially when you're a first-time entrepreneur, and you don't have maybe examples, you know, of from your experience. And, you know, for every type of organization, it requires a different type of setup. But in the end, you can take the best examples. And you know, if you find an investor that can help you to connect to entrepreneurs that can help and provide you insights and feedback and coach you even, and then, you know, in that case, you can implement those frameworks and create playbooks for the departments and then, you know, actually execute at the highest rate.
Brilliant. And You know, as we wrap up the podcast, I always like to ask guests how they self-educate, because you mentioned here just at the end, you're always looking for ways to connect with others in this instance and, you know, learn. And how do you guys go out and educate or build up your knowledge so that you're able to achieve what you want to achieve, whether it's podcasts, books, or YouTube channels that you think are interesting to others out there that you want to share with us? Maybe Tomas, you go first, and then Jimmy, you roll it up after.
I would say that as an entrepreneur, or even like if you, you know, sit in a C-suite at a company, you should be very open-minded to incorporate and listen to everyone and you know, just be open to feedback. So I think in terms of education, I tend to look at everyone as a mentor to me. Like, you know, you should be always listening and then, you know, make uneducated decisions. And in terms of like what I consume on a daily basis, I tend to like look at, you know, industry-specific articles, blog posts, and you know, try to look at examples from companies. So there are so many blogs out there. Just if you talk about like product-led growth, you can go on productled.com or you know, like OpenView, like as an investor, to like create like tons of useful content and benchmarks. And then if for every type of, you know, topic, like even for product development, you know, there are blogs run by other successful startups that are sharing engineering best practices. You should definitely like spend all of your free time, if possible, to read and you know, see how other companies solve different problems and what are the examples you can take. And of course, you can read books by writers from like successful CEOs. So that's also very useful. But for me personally, like I like more like shorter type of content pieces.
Yeah, we've got the culture of like continuously learning is something we look for as well. So let alone, and it's even more important at Tamasha's level for sure. And I think that's absolutely ingrained in us. So for me personally, just a couple of tactical things. I'm part of something which is known as, it was known as Revenue Collective, but Pavilion. So that's, you know, top rev leaders in SaaS kind of around the world. And that's been awesome. For the important thing is external points of view that you can just get feedback on what you're doing. Yeah. As well. So that's massive, of course. And then let alone even more bonus if they're frameworked already. So you can kind of try and pick up some of those nifty hard lessons one there straight away.
And I really hope that, you know, like the kind of blog we are running is also helpful for other companies to learn more about how to prevent fraud with DIY methods, because that's the way how we generate inbound traffic too. So we also try to give back, you know, to other SaaS businesses, even if they don't want to invest in a tool or a service, they can learn about how to solve problems on their own. And then, you know, maybe that's the best way to approach, you know, the whole B2B and SaaS space. Like, you know, you always give back to the community and try to help other companies in every way possible.
Definitely. And another like thing we do actively is we, for funding rounds, we've actually opened up small allocations for actually a new influx of angels. And so that was very deliberate. So we're super lucky. We have like the founders of N26, SumUp original founder, like Revolut CFO, Tide CEO. And so these guys are like part of the Seon like cap. That's the reality. And on Fide, on Comply Advantage. And so we did that deliberately to learn from. These guys are like 5, 6, 7 years ahead of us. And, you know, they're stoked by, you know, kind of the start of the Seon journey. But then Tamash, myself, Benza, we try and actively learn with these guys, whether it's grabbing a beer, right? And we have that beer time with them to literally them on WhatsApp, and we're asking a tactical question. So we're always trying to improve that network via proven world-class leaders as well.
For sure.
Brilliant. And to sum it up, it's back to the people. I mean, you guys, we've spoken a lot about people today and how to deal with people and the philosophy on people. We've also dived into subjects around structure, communication, what to look for as you go on and grow your business, and also what points to maybe look for if you're contracting and what to do. So if anyone wants to drop me a note, and if they have any questions off the back of today's podcast, please reach out to me either on LinkedIn or other channels, or drop me a note at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Happy to have a chat. And gents, super to have you on the show today. Excellent discussion. And, you know, really looking forward to watching your journey and seeing the success that comes out of it, because there's only one way this is going to go, right? Especially of today's conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and you come across as real leaders that want to make a difference, not just on the business side of things, but also on the people side of things, which is, as we said at the top end of the show, is the common denominator to a successful business. So thanks again.
Thank you, Richard.
Cheers, Richard. Thanks.